Easy Natural English with Liam, an English listening podcast. Hello everyone and welcome back. Hope that you're all doing well. I'm doing pretty okay. It's getting a little bit warmer here in the UK now. If you listened to the last episode, then you will know that I just moved from Okinawa in the south of Japan, where it was nice and warm, to the UK, where it is a little bit colder. But it is getting slightly warmer now. It's still very far from the temperatures of Okinawa, but it is about 12 degrees today, which is a bit warmer than it has been so far. But anyway, today I am going to talk to you English learners a little bit about setting up a car. So I've just moved here to the UK. I had to get a new car, and I'm going to talk about all the stuff that you need to arrange when sorting out a new car, and that's going to give you some good vocabulary that you can use when talking about cars and other vehicles. So here we go. So the car that we ended up buying, the car that we found it through a website. We're looking through a website where people sell second-hand cars. I don't want to buy a new car, like a brand new car, because it's very expensive. You know, cars lose their value very quickly. So when you buy used cars or second-hand cars, you can get them at a much lower price. So we were looking through a website for second-hand cars, and you know, there were quite a lot, and we were going through all these different cars, looking using the filter on the website to look for sort of specific specifications. And one of the things that was important to us, and we know, well, it should be important to most people, maybe some people don't care, they like sports cars and things, but we were looking for something that had good miles per gallon. So something that you could drive a long time without needing to put so much fuel into the car. So we were looking at things that had good here we use gallons for the petrol, so, or the diesel, yeah, so miles per gallon. And we found a car that was pretty fuel efficient. So fuel efficient means the same thing. It means it has a good capability of driving for a long time without using so much fuel. So we found a car that was quite fuel efficient, and we also wanted something that wasn't like too old, you know, because these newer cars, and when I say newer, you know, the car we ended up buying is just from 2015, so it's relatively new. You know, it might be considered old to some people, but that means it has all the kind of features that, you know, make cars quite comfortable these days, like having Bluetooth attached to your phone and all those kind of things, like good heating and yeah, kind of those kind of features, parking sensors, stuff like that. So it has all those kind of things. And we also wanted a car that had a decent amount of space, a good amount of space, because we have two kids. And, you know, we often go out with a stroller, as they say in America, or a buggy or pram, as they say here in the UK. You know, the little chair with wheels that you push children around with. We usually take one of those out with us, and even one of those by itself can take a lot of the boot space. And boot is the word that we use in the UK. Americans call it a trunk. So a lot of these words to do with cars seem to be different between British and American English. But yeah, the space in the back of your car where you put things, in the UK it's a boot, and in America it's a trunk. But we wanted to have a lot of boot space, so we could put in a stroller, as they say in America, or a pram, or a buggy, or a pushchair, as they say here in the UK. We wanted to have space for that, and then still have space for shopping if we went to buy groceries. And we found a car that was quite fuel efficient with, well, actually it's very fuel efficient with a good amount of space, which was quite hard to find because usually as cars get a bit bigger, they tend to not be so fuel efficient. So for fuel efficient cars, we were looking a lot at hybrids at the beginning, you know, these cars that can take petrol, but they also like charge the engine while it's driving around. So you put in petrol, as we call it in the UK. In America, they call it gas. So that's also different as well. In the UK, we call it petrol. Americans, gas. You put in the fuel and you drive around and that charges the engine. So it's a bit different from an electric car, or there are also some hybrids that can be charged. But yeah, fully electric cars, you have to plug them in and charge them. And that can be a bit inconvenient these days because there's not so much infrastructure for that. So you need to find places where you can charge them. But these hybrid cars, they charge up while you're driving around with the petrol. So you get, and then it just uses the electric engine, I think, when you're going at like slow speeds, when you're parking and things like that. So we were looking at those, but actually we ended up finding a diesel car that was more fuel efficient than most of the hybrids, especially at the price that we were looking. So we ended up getting a diesel car. And diesel is a bit strange. In some ways it's less environmentally friendly, and in some ways it could be more environmentally friendly than petrol. It was something I tried to learn a lot about before we bought a diesel car, but because the car that we've got is very fuel efficient, it's relatively environmentally friendly. I mean, no car is environmentally friendly, really. There's problems with all cars. Public transport is definitely the most environmentally way to travel, or walking or cycling. But apparently it's not too bad when I looked up our car. So that's the car that we ended up with. And then after we got the car, as I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, I'm going to talk a bit about what I had to set up. So when you get a new car, and when I say you, that means everybody, when you get a new car, you need to, and I think this is pretty much the same in most countries, you need to have tax or road tax, you need to have insurance, and you need to have a check on the car that says it's safe to drive. That check in the UK is called an MOT, but that name is different in different places. Like when I was in Australia, they call it a warrant of fitness. And in America, I can't remember what they call it. In America, it could be something different, but this thing's called different things in different countries. But in the UK, we call it an MOT. But I think in most countries, you have to have this kind of check where a mechanic are the people that check your car, like that fix cars. The mechanics have to check your car and say, yep, it's safe to go on the road. And if something's wrong, then you have to fix it before they give you this kind of certificate to say, yeah, your car is safe. So our car came with an MOT already. It has about a year of MOT on it, so we didn't have to worry about that. And because, as I was talking about earlier, our car is quite, you know, it's relatively environmentally friendly. That means that it actually has zero tax. We don't need to pay any tax on our car. And that the tax you pay on your car can really vary. And these days, because the government is trying to make people have more, environmentally friendly cars, if your car is more fuel efficient, you pay lower tax. So if your car uses a lot of fuel, they tend to have higher taxes. And also certain types of cars, so what they consider luxury cars, so kind of sports cars and those kind of like sort of cars that you see like businessmen driving, those kind of cars tend to have higher tax as well. But because ours is like a family car and it's quite fuel efficient and it's like a newer car, it has zero tax. We don't have to pay any tax on it, which was nice because some cars can be hundreds of pounds every year, but we don't have to pay anything for ours. And then the other thing is insurance. And that's something, again, I think you need to have in most countries. You at least have to have what we, in the UK, we call it third-party insurance. So third-party just means that if you crash into somebody, then your insurance will pay to fix their car. So if you have a crash with someone, then your insurance will fix the other person's car. So you don't have to pay for somebody else's car, but it won't fix your car. But, you know, because everybody has to have third-party insurance, if you crash into somebody, then their insurance should pay for your car, as long as you didn't do something wrong, as long as you just an accident and you weren't doing something stupid, then yeah, their insurance should pay for your car. And same if they weren't doing anything stupid, then your insurance should pay for their car. So that's how that works. Everybody has to have this third party insurance. And then if you want to, you can have insurance that covers fire and theft, which is a little bit more expensive. And then you can have insurance that covers everything. So if your car has a problem, your insurance will pay for it. Or at least they're supposed to. It's usually quite hard to get money out of insurance companies, but that's how it's supposed to work. So yeah, you have to have tax, what we call MOT in the UK, the check for your car, and you have to have insurance. And setting all that up was pretty easy here in the UK. I think I mentioned in the last episode that I'm finding things are much more streamlined in the UK compared to Japan. Like everything is much easier to do. You can do everything online. So like setting up the tax for my car, I did that online. It took like 2 minutes. It was just like putting in like my name and address and then putting in the registration of the car. And that was done. That was like 2 minutes done. Setting up the insurance. I took a while because I was looking around to try to find the cheapest insurance, but actually just setting up the insurance again was just done online. Just quickly filled out a form, and that took like 5 minutes or something. And then, the MOT, that was done already, so I didn't have to worry about that. But yeah, so far I'm finding setting up anything in the UK seems to be so much easier. Like everything is online these days. Whereas in Japan, there's still a lot of things where they want you to do it in person, fill out forms, show ID, do all these kind of steps to do everything. But yeah, so far, everything here in the UK has been much easier to do. And yeah, everything's online. The websites work much better. The websites are much smoother. And yeah, everything's just very simple. So that's quite nice because we've had quite a lot of things to set up. So it's nice that everything's nice and easy. It's made life a lot less stressful. So yeah, we got the car all set up. The only thing we need now is to convert my wife's driving license. So I already had a British driving license that was still valid, that was still in date. So valid means it's still possible to use it. So my driving license is valid until next year. Then I'll need to renew it. But for now, I can, yeah, my license is still okay. But my wife just has the Japanese license. But because Japan has very similar road rules to the UK, they drive on the left like we do. Because the road rules are quite similar, my wife can use her Japanese license with no international license or anything. She doesn't need to do anything. She can use her Japanese license for 1 year, but a maximum of 1 year, and then she needs to change to a British license. And that's one thing that actually was easier in Japan than in the UK. I was just saying that everything is easier here, but the one thing that isn't easier is changing her license, because I had my British license when I went to Japan and I converted it to get a Japanese license, and I had to go to the like driving center and I had to do an eye test, and I think I had to answer a few questions maybe, and then I did have to wait a long time, but it was just like one day, and I didn't need a translation or anything, and they just gave me my Japanese license. But here in the UK, with my wife's license, she has to send her Japanese license to the, I think, to the Japanese embassy, and it has to have some kind of official translation. They send that back, and then she needs to send it to the driving like center, the DVLA, and then they'll give her a Japanese license. So that is a little bit more long-winded, has a few more steps. Long-winded means, yeah, sort of a process that is a bit longer than it needs to be. We use that a lot when people are talking as well. You can say that was a long-winded explanation. It means, yeah, that was sort of verbose. It was longer than it needs to be. But anyway, yeah, so that process is a bit, it's a bit long for her to change over her her driving license. But at the moment, she doesn't need to. She can drive on her Japanese license for a year. So it's okay at the moment. But she is still getting used to driving here because, you know, it's very similar to Japan, but there are maybe some little differences that she's not used to. I got my driving license here in the UK, so I did drive a car a little bit while I was learning to drive, but I haven't actually owned a car here in the UK. But I did drive a motorbike here for quite some time, so I've had experience driving motorbikes on UK roads, so I'm kind of used to how UK roads work. And one of the things that has been hard for my wife is roundabouts. So roundabouts are these things that replace traffic lights. So instead of having traffic lights, some countries have roundabouts. And the UK is known for having many roundabouts. I think most countries don't have them. And then I think there are other countries that have like a few, like really not very many. But in the UK, we have a lot of roundabouts. And yeah, they are this thing that you need to drive up to, and then usually they have like four roads on them. Sometimes it can be more or less, like sometimes it can be three, sometimes it can be, yeah, five or six, but usually they're four roads that join to the roundabout. And basically if no one is going around the lane that you're in, you can enter the roundabout and you drive around the roundabout, and then you can turn off where you want to exit the roundabout. And there are certain like rules about how to do that, depending on, yeah, how big the roundabout is and how many lanes it has and where you want to turn off after you enter the roundabout. There's sort of different rules you have to follow. So if you're not used to it, that can be a little bit confusing. I think, yeah, because America doesn't have roundabouts, or at least doesn't usually have roundabouts. I don't know if there's one somewhere in America, but I think there's basically none in America. So I know a lot of Americans come here and have trouble with those. Yeah, so they're a bit hard to get used to if people aren't used to them, and my wife's not used to them. So she's still trying to figure those out. And also where we live at the moment is kind of a suburb. It's like out of the city. And around us, there's quite a lot of countryside, and some of those roads are very narrow, and you have traffic going both ways, and they're very narrow, and you have to kind of pass people, and it's very close sometimes. So my wife is, yeah, sort of getting used to those things, but she's getting there. She's getting a bit more confident now with British roads. So anyway, that was a bit about our new car, setting up our new car and driving here in the UK. Coming up to about 20 minutes now, so I'm going to end this episode here. If you have enjoyed listening to this episode and you would like to see the transcript, if you'd like to see the words written down, then you can join my Patreon page. It's $2 to US dollars a month to see the transcripts, to see all the words written down. Or if you would like to hear a bonus podcast episode every month, every week, sorry, that is $5 a month. So for $5 a month, You get the transcript, and you also get an extra podcast episode every week. So have a look at my Patreon page. There is a link for that below. Thank you all very much for listening, and I'll see you back here next time.